Hello. Welcome to today's webinar, Public Safety Insights, How to Create a Community of Advocates. My name is Pat Lynch. I am president of Business Alignment Strategies Incorporated, a management consulting firm in Long Beach, California. I help mission-driven organizations optimize their outcomes by aligning their people, their programs, their processes with their goals. I'm particularly interested in public sector agencies because I found that their employees tend to be committed to a given cause that ultimately supports the public good. They often feel that their work is a calling, and so their commitment and enthusiasm is really astonishing to me. The problem is that this commitment and enthusiasm often is choked off by their bureaucracy. And I don't like that. So it is my mission to help those who do have a mission in the public sector to be able to bring that forward. Just a little bit about me so you know who I am. I've worked in the public and private sectors, both as an employee and then over about the last 15 or so years as a consultant. For example, I live in Southern California. I've worked on a variety of projects with over a dozen Los Angeles County departments over the years, both as a consultant and as an instructor in their LA County Learning Academy. I was a professor at the California State University system before I started my own consulting business on a full-time basis. Most recently, and probably most relevant to this call, I've worked with the Los Angeles City Fire Department for about 5.5 years on a variety of projects, including service optimization, resource allocation, strategic planning, and succession planning. And I've just started an organizational alignment project with the Long Beach Fire Department. So let me show you this slide. It is one that I use often. My specialty is organizational alignment. To get an idea of what I mean by that, I'd like to first show you what organizational misalignment looks like. That is the slide that's in front of you now. If you think of the big arrow as the direction in which the organization wants to go, it could be represent a mission, a vision, goals, but basically where the organization wants to go. Those little arrows in there represent programs, processes, systems, people that are all trying to help the organization achieve its mission. But you see, and by the way, most of those, in my experience, usually are excellent. But look at where they are. They're not going in the same direction. They're going all different directions. So it's highly unlikely that an organization that is misaligned will achieve its mission. What I do is to help leaders and organizations go from organizational misalignment to organizational alignment. So what you see in slide 4 is what an organization that has its people, its systems, its programs, its processes aligned with where it wants to go. So the small arrows are all lined up with and they support the big arrow, the vision, the mission, the goals. Organizations in this condition are able to achieve their mission much more quickly and effectively. For many public sector agencies, particularly those that provide services that deal with life and death matters, organizational alignment is mission critical. The consequences of failure for you are greater than for other organizations. And as a result, I found that your commitment also is greater. So now that you know a little bit about where I'm coming from, let's get started. So the first question we have is, why are we here? I think it's really critical for you to know why I think it's critical for public safety professionals to take on what is probably a new kind of leadership role for you. That is the role of educator. You need to educate the public and politicians and decision makers. So what I'm going to do is go through a series of facts that brought us to why we are here now that answer this question. Before I do that, though, I'd like to point out that one of my primary objectives in this webinar is to provide you with some concrete ideas about how you can communicate your value to the public and to decision makers as effectively as possible. Toward that end, I've tried to model some of the things that I'm going to tell you about in this presentation by the content of the slides. So what you will notice is that there are many more photos and graphics in this presentation than there are words. And I'd just like to take a minute and give credit for this, for the photographs and the graphics, to my very talented and creative virtual assistant. Her name is Lori Cantus, and she is the owner of GoToGirls. And Kate, who is assisting me today on this call, also is with GoToGirls. Amazing, amazing support. So without them, we would not be here. So why are we here? Well, the first reason we're here is that we are in a time of exceptionally scarce resources that are threatening the level of public safety in communities across the country. Budgets simply are not balanced. In cities, towns, counties, states, expenditures have been outpacing revenues. As a result, government budgets at all levels no longer are sustainable. Things must change before they fall apart. So let's look at some relevant facts that brought us to this place. It's a fact that people generally agree that public safety should be the government's top priority. It's also a fact that dire economic conditions have devastated local and state budgets. Also a fact that public safety often accounts for a large proportion of those budgets. And as a result, public safety agencies no longer are immune from budget cuts. It is a fact that decision makers are faced with tough choices that often have political implications because in the public sector, those decision makers often are politicians. It's also a fact that public safety agencies often do a poor job of educating their communities about the specific impacts that budget cuts have or that they will have over time on their safety. As a result, when politicians and decision makers have to make tough choices, they seldom know what the unintended consequences of their actions are likely to be. I've been reading in the paper recently, especially last year, after, at least in Southern California, more of the public safety agencies were impacted by the budget cuts, whereas in previous years they were somewhat sheltered. This year, politicians are bemoaning the fact that they made certain decisions last year because they said, we didn't know what the impact would be. Had we known then what we know now, we would have made different decisions. We do not want that happening in your community. Okay, so we need to educate decision makers. And people, they just don't know. And I'll give you an example. Here in Long Beach, our fiscal year begins on October 1st, so we are just beginning to get into the budget cycle. Last year, the big issue during the budget hearings here in Long Beach was about the staffing on fire department apparatus. The city leaders wanted to cut the staffing from 4 people to 3. The public thought that sounded pretty reasonable. I mean, 3 people, 4 people, it's all good, right? What they didn't know, however, is that because of OSHA's two-in, two-out policy, a 3-person crew arriving on the scene of a structure fire cannot enter the building. Now, the local firefighters did try to educate the public. They put a lot of effort into it. I could tell by what they presented, they spent a lot of time researching the topic. They compiled lots and lots of articles. They were academic articles, statistics, reports by the NFPA and other organizations. Unfortunately, few people, if any, read the information because it was not presented in a user-friendly manner. Now, I'm not picking on local firefighters. This scenario is not unique. I've seen it over and over again. Why is that? It's because until recently, public safety professionals haven't had to demonstrate the value they provide to their communities. Now that they do, they need to learn how to present the information clearly, accurately, and particularly in forms that the intended audiences can understand easily and quickly. So, another fact, the provision of emergency services will change. The only question is how. For example, public safety agencies today face competition from the private sector that used not to exist. Another example, taxpayers are angry. They perceive, based on media reports, that public sector employees in general, and sometimes public safety employees in particular, have overly generous pay, benefits, and pensions. When they're out of work, And they're being told by politicians and the media that we're cutting services to pay these benefits, and yes, you have to pay even though you're out of work. They get mad. As a result, you're facing an entirely different environment than you have in previous years. As a result, public safety professionals now need to step up to inform the conversation about public safety in your communities. What's the point here? The purpose of this webinar is to enable politicians and other decision makers to select informed choices when they allocate scarce resources. The desired outcome, what I would like to happen as a result of your taking this information and applying it, is that you have responsible levels of public safety in each one of your communities. Now, please note, my purpose here is not to bash politicians and decision makers. It is absolutely not. It is just the opposite. It is to help you educate them so that they are able to make sound resource decisions. So how do you achieve that purpose? By educating the public. So today we have four items on our agenda. Well, let me ask, are there any questions about kind of setting the scene where we are today and why it's important for you to be able to communicate effectively? Do you have any questions here, Kate?
Not at this time.
Okay, let's go ahead then. Thank you. Okay, we've got four topics on today's agenda. Number one, changing the conversation. Number two, channeling public support into active advocacy. Number three, getting your message across effectively. And number four, participating effectively in the public safety conversation. So let's get right to number one, changing the conversation. What I mean by change the conversation is to refocus it from cutting budgets or cutting resources to providing a responsible level of public safety. These are two very different conversations. For example, cutting the budget, a conversation about cutting the budget can have only one outcome, fewer resources. When fewer resources becomes the objective, then success in cutting the budget is measured by, guess what, how much we cut. However, when the focus is providing a responsible level of public safety, while there's no guarantee that the budgets will not be cut, success now is measured in terms of how safe is our community. All right, so we know budgets will be cut. I'm not here to suggest that they will not. They will. However, we need to change the focus, change the conversation. So we'll talk about how to change the conversation in two primary ways today. First, we'll talk about how do you frame issues. So how do you change that focus from cutting budgets to providing responsible level of public safety and asking the proper questions? Before we do that, though, we first need to talk about one critical concept that will help you, and make one important distinction. Both of these things set the stage for the rest of our discussion today. In fact, if you don't take anything else away, then you need to take this first concept to heart. Slide 15. What's that mean? WIIFM. It stands for What's in it for me? And it's there because the biggest motivator that I know is enlightened self-interest. What's in it for me? The most important word in this phrase is me. When you're trying to get me to do something, you must give me a reason why it will benefit me personally. Not my department, not my crew, not my family, me, because it's all about me. So what's in it for me? So let's use an example. For those of you who are on the call, what's in it for you to take your valuable time today to listen and participate in this webinar? Here are a few possibilities. You might be here because you believe you'll be able to achieve your department's mission of saving lives and property or protecting and serving your community. You may think that this will enable you to serve the public properly. You may be able to feel proud of the service that you provide because you're able to do it. you may believe it will help you do the job you love to do to the best of your ability and with the support you need. So any of those, perhaps some of these benefits resonate with you. There may be others. The point is, you would not be here unless you expected to get some personal benefit out of attending this webinar. So enlightened self-interest, what's in it for me? However, that's not enough. Necessary, not sufficient. We also, remember I said the biggest motivator I know is enlightened self-interest. Let's talk about the enlightened piece of it. This is where the education piece comes in. People often don't know or realize when something is in their best interest. They need somebody to point it out to them and to educate them. So in the case of public safety, people know vaguely that first responders keep them safe. They seldom know the how or the why of what it takes to make that happen. So when there are budget cuts proposed, members of the public have no idea how those cuts will impact your ability to keep them safe. For example, they generally don't know, as I said, the implications of reducing staffing on an apparatus from 4-person crew to 3-person crew. They don't know the ways in which shutting down, for example, the PALS program may result in a higher rate of juvenile crime or gang membership. They don't know that the possibility of reducing fire service levels may increase their insurance rates. They don't know what a decrease in response time means to them personally, whether it's from on the law enforcement side, emergency medical services, or on the fire service. You need to tell them specifically. And because they don't know, it's your job to teach them. You have to help connect the dots for them between fewer resources and the level of public safety that you can provide. So enlightened self-interest means what's in it for me, and sometimes you have to teach me what that means. Now, the concept, so enlightened self-interest is the important concept. And by the way, enlightened self-interest works anytime you're in an interaction with any human being, all right? Enlightened self-interest will get you a long way. So this is a concept you can use not just here, not just in your professional life, but in other parts of your life as well. Now, the very important distinction that we have to make next is the distinction between activists and advocates. What we want to do is create communities of advocates. We do not want a community of activists. And here's the reason why. In this slide, slide 17, we see a group of people who represent what I think of as activists. For example, here are some what I would call kind of general characteristics of activists. They tend to focus narrowly on a single topic, and they tend to stick to that issue regardless of any negative repercussions it might create. They also have personal agendas that take precedence over the greater good. Often they use scare tactics, and they paint unrealistic and extreme or unlikely scenarios. Often they are against issues, and they're unable to articulate clearly and consistently what they are for. Sometimes they take militant or aggressive actions, and they're often perceived as being at odds with the public good. And I would say the recent Occupy movements across the U.S. come to mind as people who are activists. Although they try to come together as one group, the fact that there are such disparate agendas and they have no compelling, common, big picture makes it highly unlikely they will be successful. As a result, they make it easy for decision makers to say no to their demands. These days, given the media reports of government employees enjoying benefits perceived as excessive and unsustainable by the public, with a large percentage of people who are unemployed, by the way, police officers and firefighters who resist cuts to their pay and benefits are labeled activists. This label makes it easier for the public and for politicians to demonize you and to dismiss whatever points you're trying to make, It also makes it easier for them to cut public safety budgets without regard to the consequences. This is not intentional. They just don't know enough to connect the cause with the effect. Last year, I was talking to a police officers union president who said to me, I've been telling them, meaning city management, I've been telling them for years that proportional sharing is an ineffective budget mechanism, and they keep ignoring me. They tell me I represent a special interest. Now, when politicians can easily dismiss an individual or group as an activist, their jobs become easier. Remember, enlightened self-interest. It's in my interest to get you out of my face. You're an activist. Be gone. So can you see why being perceived as activist does not help the cause of public safety? So the question is, if not activists, then what? Well, the answer is advocates. More specifically, we want to create advocates for public safety. Now, here are some of the characteristics of advocates. People who are advocates tend to believe that they are called to do the right thing for the greater good. They often feel that they have a higher calling that transcends their personal and often popular interests. They are people who try to change the agenda to get back to what's right when other people have strayed from the path. They tend to plead for or on behalf of others as opposed to themselves, although they themselves may benefit, which is fine. They tend to champion a cause rather than personal interests. As a result, advocates do have credibility, and they cannot be dismissed easily. Politicians and decision makers find it very difficult to argue against the common good. So this is why we want a community of advocates and not a community of activists. So now that we've made this crucial distinction between activists and advocates, how do we change the conversation from focusing on cutting budgets to providing responsible levels of public safety? The answer is we put first things first. Here's what I mean. The primary purpose of any level of government is to ensure adequate levels of public safety. In fact, one may argue, and I have argued, that once any government goes beyond public safety and creating infrastructure, it's overstepped its primary purpose. Now, in better economic times, governments often went way beyond their primary purposes and mission, providing all kinds of programs and services, which the public wanted. They were popular. Today, they're forced to go back to basics. However, politicians and the public are going back to basics, kicking and screaming. It is not easy to take things away from people once they have become used to them. So it's up to you and to the public to remind the politicians and decision makers that government exists primarily to provide a reasonable level of public safety. Everything else is secondary. Now, lest I, you know, create any misunderstandings, I am not advocating that entire city, county, state budgets be devoted to public safety. I am not advocating that at all. I am saying that we need to begin with a responsible level of public safety as the intended outcome. It's the first thing first, and work backwards from there. In doing that, we have to define the term responsible. So that may look different from one government entity to another. And by the way, you as public safety professionals need to inform that conversation. Now, once we've established that public safety is or should be the top priority, and by the way, when I say top priority, I do mean the top priority. People tend to say, oh, it's one of my top priorities. Well, no. There can only be one top. You can have, you know, 2, 3, 4 through 100 to follow, but there's one top. So we establish first that public safety is or should be the top priority, and then we turn to redirecting the conversation. What we do, we redirect the conversation from cutting budgets to providing responsible and adequate levels of public safety. The public conversation must be about desired outcomes rather than on the methods to achieve those outcomes. So in this slide, you see that the sharp, the clear word is outcomes. In this case, our outcome is public safety. The fuzzy words represent tools or methods by which the outcome can be achieved. Now, this is an important distinction. It is so important to distinguish between outcomes and methodology. More often than not, the conversations are around methodology or tools. They are not on the outcome. So your job as public safety professionals is to bring the conversation back to outcomes and keep it there. Okay, these fuzzy words that are there, they are the means rather than the ends. However, they often become the end. So now we're talking about budgets. Now we're talking about proportional sharing. Now we're talking about political agendas or special interests. When that happens, then we shift to the methodology and we get very different outcomes. For example, when the focus becomes cutting the budget, the only possible conversation is how much do we cut? And as I said, success is now measured by how much we cut. As a result, we end up with unintended consequences, collateral damage. Another example, when proportional sharing becomes the end, such that its consequences become irrelevant to decision making, the whole resource allocation process is flawed. And most of the time, my experience is that proportional sharing is not used properly. And when that's the case, you have a flawed process. So the point here is, please, and I'm speaking as a member of the public, do not allow the conversation to focus on methodology. Please bring it back to outcomes. In this case, the outcome that we're talking about is the level of responsible public safety that decision makers agree to provide for their communities. Now, once we've made the distinction between outcomes and methods, and we've resolved to focus on outcomes, let us now turn to ways in which we frame issues and ask questions. So the slide we have here, which is slide 21, actually illustrates two important concepts that I'd like to talk about. These two concepts help us to shape the conversation so that they focus on outcomes rather than methods. So this is the how do we do that. So the first concept that this slide illustrates tells us that the questions that we ask send people in the direction in which they seek the answers. These questions also may impose constraints on possible answers. So the point here is to choose your questions wisely. The question here on this slide says, can we provide X level of public safety? The problem with this question is that it is a closed-ended question, and it makes it very easy for decision makers to say no, because there are only two possible answers, yes or no. That is the end of the conversation. This kind of question, you know, can we do this? A closed-ended question does not invite thought or reflection. It doesn't even allow for the possibility that there may be an answer somewhere between yes or no. Excuse me. It also takes the focus away from the outcome, in this case, public safety, and puts it, guess where, back on methodology. We do not want to be there. We just talked about why we cannot afford to have that happen. Second, the second point that this slide illustrates is that asking people questions that require a yes-no response effectively boxes the other person into a corner. Have you ever, I'm sure you've heard this, you've heard someone say, and I'm sure you've said it yourself, you didn't give me any choice but to say no. Well, that's probably true. If your only choices are yes and no, there's a 50% chance that you'll get a no. The bottom line here is that when the focus is on the level of public safety that to be provided, you change the conversation by changing the questions you ask. In this case, we go from asking, can we provide X level of public safety, to asking, how can we provide X level of public safety? Very different questions, you get very different answers. when we frame the question this way, it invites thoughtful discussion, it invites creativity, and it enables you to provide options to give the decision makers and the public realistic choices. So here are some of the benefits of providing options when we're discussing public safety. First of all, it helps you to demonstrate the impact of public safety of the various choices. So you can say, given option one, here's the impact. Here's what it means to you specifically. And remember, what's in it for me means tell me what it means to me personally. Another benefit is that you're giving the decision maker choices, and they feel that they retain some element of control, because they do. So you're not saying it's my way or the highway. You're saying, here are the options. Which one do you choose? Okay? So again, the question, it's not, do you want one of these? It's, which of these would you like? Questions are really, really critical. And third, another benefit is that it puts the accountability on decision makers because they now are informed about the choices. Now, what I've seen, my experience, is that particularly politicians may not like this. I got news for them. Making tough decisions is their job. So educate them. Ask the questions. Ask the questions in ways that provide information that give people options. So let's just summarize quickly this topic one, which is changing the conversation. Make sure the conversation about public safety occurs in the context of the government entity's mission and purpose. Remind people that the reason government exists is to provide infrastructure and public safety. Everything else goes beyond that purpose. We also talked about framing information so that it catches people's attention. So we put things in context. We tell people what's in it for me, with the emphasis on me, and we connect the dots for them so that they understand why it's in their best interest to take a particular option. We develop and ask very specific questions that are open-ended and invite thoughtful discussion, and we provide options. So that takes us to topic number two, channel public support into active advocacy. Now, the fact is that the public already is the ally of public safety professionals, at least most of the time. I will concede that those in the fire service and emergency medical services tend to enjoy a somewhat higher level of trust than those in law enforcement. That's the nature of your respective jobs. The bottom line, though, and at the end of the day, the fact is that people want to be safe. Therefore, it is in their enlightened self-interest to help you keep them safe. They just need to know how to do it. How can they help? And I hear members of the public saying this all the time, tell me what to do. What can I do? You need to be able to tell them that so that you can begin to turn them from allies into advocates for public safety, for the good of the community. So let's talk about how you turn your allies into advocates for public safety. Now, channeling the public's desire to support first responders into becoming effective advocates is part of your job as public safety professionals. You haven't had to do it that much, if at all, previously, because people were fine. They were good with what you did, you know, keeping people safe. If there were budget cuts, all you'd say is people may die, which was true, and that was good enough. It's not good enough anymore. Resources are too scarce. So my suggestion is that you begin to think about this responsibility, this leadership role in educating your communities as a way to allow the public to help you keep them safe. Everyone wants the same thing. They want to be safe, and they want to return safely to their families at the end of the day. That is the objective. Now, one way of channeling public support is to invite your community members to help you navigate the maze to get the resources that you need to keep them safe. Because let's face it, money is tight. It's hard to find the resources necessary to maintain public safety levels. We all need to be creative. There are creative things. There are people who will help you do things. For example, in both the L.A. Fire Department and the L.A. Police Department, there are foundations whose job, whose mission is to support their police department or their fire department. Let them help you. So here's a message you might think about sending. Help us keep you, the public, safe by navigating this maze with us. Be our partners to identify and obtain the resources necessary for us to do that. Okay, now this is a picture of what we don't want to have happen. This is a fire station that's been closed. We do not want that, so we're trying to prevent that. You can use, now a picture like this is very effective. It's an effective way of showing people the consequences of budget cuts. However, big caveat here, only if it is accurate. For example, if your department, if the fire department, for example, is closing an engine company, it would not be ethical for you to show this picture of a station that has closed. And many people make that mistake. They hear we're going to close an engine company, and they think the fire station is going to be closed. So use some pictures, use fire trucks, use, you know, little fire trucks, and show how many are there and how many will be taken away. Show them what the difference is, what is going to be different if we do that than exists now. Now, it's highly unlikely that you can prevent public safety budgets from being cut. That's unrealistic. However, when you create a community of advocates, not activists, but advocates for public safety, you have the opportunity to ensure that decision makers are fully informed about the implications of their decisions. The objective here is to ensure that all the cuts are the result of fully informed choices. In order for that to happen, people have to know exactly what the implications of the budget cuts will be so that they can decide whether or not those outcomes are acceptable. Okay, so the public has to make this decision. They need to become educated so that they can help you. They need to become, in short, public safety advocates. Now, I'd like to revisit just for a minute this difference between advocates and activists. Okay, we need advocates for public safety. You need to inspire people to take action. You need to engage the public and build relationship. The public needs to be able to articulate accurately, clearly, what they want public safety to look like in their communities so that they can turn around and communicate their public safety expectations clearly and specifically to the decision makers, and so that they can hold the decision makers accountable for the promises that they make. So it's the job of you, of the public safety professionals, to educate the public, including the decision makers. Okay, now let's move to our third topic, which is getting your message across effectively. I'm going to spend a little bit of time here because my observation is this is where the biggest mistakes occur, and they are preventable mistakes. So let's take a look first. The first rule here, if you will, is to tell your audiences what they need to know. Do not tell them everything you know. You need to tell them enough about the how and the why of your work so that they can make informed decisions. So ask yourself, what do they need to know? For example, they need to know how resource cuts specifically affect their safety. They need to know what's in it for me personally when resources are cut. But they don't need to know all the details. Give them the highlights in ways that they can understand easily. For example, as I mentioned before, the firefighters who gave out packets of information, academic articles, statistics, technical articles, people didn't read them because it was too much information. Okay, they didn't need to know all that. All they need to know, and I'll show you in a slide coming up in a few minutes, a more effective way of showing that. Another way of telling them what they need to know is giving them a clear picture of what will be different for them after the budget cuts than exists now. The other thing I would highly recommend is that when you're talking about the budget cuts, a very compelling topic of conversation is what has changed over the years. So, for example, what I encourage my clients to do is go back to the pre-budget cut years. And instead of talking about what's the difference between this year and last year, well, now we have to cut, you know, $1 million this year or 10% this year. Instead, you say, over the last 5 years, so let's say, you know, or 3 years, whatever your the period has been for your department or your agency to have had your budget cut, say 3 years ago, before the cuts, here's where we are. After 3 years of cuts, for example, we've lost 40% of our civilian staff. Here's what those losses have meant to you. And then you list them. You know, slower response times to your inquiries, more time waiting in line, whatever those cuts mean. We're not able to get the grants that we were before because we have no staff to get grants, to administer the grants. So we've lost money. Another example, let's say over the last 3 years we've lost X percent of our sworn staff. Here's what that means to you. Or over the last 3 years we've taken X number of apparatus or cars out of service. Here's what that means to you. Now, as you're doing this, again, there, you've got to use your integrity when talking about this. Again, we're not activists here. We're trying to be advocates, the greater good. So when you're talking to people, you need to be truthful. You need to be factual. And here's another tip. Logic makes people think. All right, so you give them something to read. They read it. They're thinking about it. Okay, it makes them think. It is emotion that makes them act. So when you can show them as opposed to tell them, often you can be much more effective. Okay, now let's talk about how do we do this? How do we get a message across effectively? So there are a few steps to doing this. The first one is to identify the value that you provide. So, and what you do then is you take this value, you communicate the specific value you provide. Again, saying to people, you know, saying people will die just doesn't work anymore as a way to prevent budget cuts. So here's what I would suggest. Take some information, some behind the scenes information. For example, what does having 40% fewer civilian staff mean? And let them know the impact of cuts that affect them, but they don't see people. They see those who are in the front lines. They see the people on the fire trucks. They see the police cars. They see the ambulances. But they don't see the people who support them. So you identify the value. Now, let me just give you a quick example of something we did last year with the Long Beach Fire Department. I'm sorry, L.A. Fire Department. There was a project that we did. It was called Service Optimization, and it had several purposes, one of which was obviously to try to use resources more effectively. Also, we were trying to gather the data that would help the department identify the value it provides to the community in very specific ways. So we interviewed a bunch of people in administrative positions. These were sworn members we started with. We also interviewed civilians, but we did start with the sworn members because people in the field, the firefighters in the field, didn't understand what they were doing. And we heard them say over and over, you know, send those guys behind the desk back out in the field. You know, that'll save a lot of money and the resources will be where they need to be. They didn't understand how their colleagues were supporting them. So, for example, I'll give you just a couple of the questions that we used. One of the questions we asked people as we interviewed, we said, if your position were not staffed and nobody else did it, what would the impact be on your mission of saving lives and property? Okay, so asking what's the impact, go to your mission, saving lives and property, protect, serving and protecting. What is the impact on that mission if your position were not staffed? Another thing we did was ask them to list their three most critical duties or responsibility. We then asked them four questions. What would be the impact on the department mission if, let's say they were talking about a duty, if this duty was totally eliminated and nobody did it? The next question is, what would be the impact on the department's mission if you delayed this duty? Third question, what would be the impact if you did part of it, so you partially fulfill this duty? And the last question, what would be the impact on the mission if the standards or expectations for completing the duty were reduced? So as a result of that, we were able to get really very, very specific information about the value provided by the LA Fire Department, and that is the type of information that you take to the public and you communicate to them and you take to your politicians and decision makers so that they fully understand what the consequences are of their decisions. They're in a tough place. There's no doubt about them. And so you need to help them make those decisions. So let me just show you, so we can talk about the value. Here are some ways to show visually the value you provide. So, for example, on the top left of slide 31, you support economic growth. For example, safe communities attract residents and businesses. People move there. For example, in the fire department or whoever does the building inspections, if you can inspect buildings, issue permits more quickly, you shorten the time it takes for businesses to open for business, to start hiring people, and start paying taxes. You provide safe communities, shortest possible response times. You have well-trained professionals. People have confidence that help will arrive when they need it. It shows prevention of harm, for example, gang prevention measures, programs for keeping at-risk kids on the right path, and fire prevention measures. So here are the things that that happen. You protect the most vulnerable of the population. So these are just some of the things that that come up when we're talking about the value that you provide. Here are some ways, suggested ways, that you can show people what you mean by that. You don't always have to talk to them. Now, in this next slide, again, this goes back to how do you show your value? Well, there are a couple things that are going on here. When we look at this, generally speaking, we've got a desired outcome. So here we've got public safety, and things are changing. Okay, inputs are increasing, outputs are decreasing. If you want to maintain the same level, then there are only two things we can do. We can either increase the inputs or we can decrease the outputs. Those are the only two choices. And I think this, and again, this is my great virtual assistant came up with this, but what it does is show very effectively to increase inputs. Here are your choices. Again, limited choices. You can delegate. You can outsource. You can ask people to work longer or have them work overtime, or you can increase efficiency. Those are the ways that you can increase your inputs. Well, let's look realistically at this. Delegation generally doesn't work because there's nobody left to delegate to. Outsourcing, possibly. Working longer, working overtime, not likely. People already are working 80-hour weeks, and they are working as hard as they can. There's no money for overtime. Increased efficiency? Perhaps. However, at this point, most agencies really have been cut to the bone and beyond. So increasing inputs for most agencies, highly unlikely. That leaves us with the other choice, which is to decrease outputs. Four choices here. You can stop doing things. You can delay doing things. You can provide partial services or programs, or you can decrease the quality. So if you engage in a process like we did with the LA Fire Department, you can come up with, okay, these are the things that happen. They give you specific consequences, and they help you demonstrate your value. Okay, so in demonstrating your value is the next thing that we, so identifying your value, step one. Step two is demonstrating your value. Let me show you this. This is instead of handing people a packet of information, what if you gave this to them? It's very direct and it's compelling. You've got a picture there. Remember, words and logic make people think. Pictures make them act, emotions. So this issue of four firefighters versus three, federal law requires, it doesn't, there's a standard, it's an OSHA standard, on site to enter a building, we have been cut to three. Your children, your pets, your stuff. Your voice matters. That's the other part of your message, that point in black. Your voice matters. You need to tell them why it matters. And also importantly, call your city council and oppose proposition, whatever it is. give them a call to action. Tell them what to do. You be very specific about what you want them to do. Now we've got a little pop quiz. It's, you know, which is more effective? Please don't hang up. This is an easy one, I promise. I want you to take a look at the next two slides. Both of them, now the credit for the next two slides goes to watchtheroad.org. Okay, so they're not me, they're not my creative virtual assistant. So of the two slides, which is the more effective? Here's the first one. It's a list, the top 10 roadway user bad behaviors. Okay, so a lot of white space, not too hard to read, behaviors that contribute to crashes. Bullet points, much better than narratives. Okay, let's take a look at the next one, option B. Okay, here we have a message that is short, it's sweet, and it makes a good billboard. There is instant relatability. So I'm thinking that most of you would look at option B and say that is the more effective one. Let me give you a few other pictures just to give you some ideas. Some pictures of just well-known campaigns or just interesting campaigns that give an easy message without any need for reports and statistics. So we've got the stop, drop, and roll for the fire service. We've got the click it or ticket. And also very effective, by the way, one reason I like that is it also tells you how much the fine is if you don't click it. Don't play with matches. Now, emergency checklists. Checklists are very effective ways of communicating information to people quickly and easily. So my suggestion to you would be to create some checklists. And by the way, one of the checklists that I've developed, it's not on here, shown on here, is how do you prepare the public, your members but first, and the public, to address, say, a city council member or county commissioners. So I've developed a checklist step by step. Here's what you need to do, beginning with the fact, hi, my name is Pat Lynch, I live in District 5, and I vote. Okay, they have my attention I have their attention because I am a voter. Now, interestingly, this picture on the right, that is an actual picture. It's a sculpture, if you will, of 60 cars that actually were in crashes. And I'm told that the message there in Hebrew says, don't drink and drive. The point is that these are very impactful. So here are just a few examples, because I wanted to show you some specific examples of ways that you can communicate effectively. So now we're in step four, or our fourth topic for today, and that is how you, as public safety professionals, can participate effectively in the public safety conversation. And what I mean by that is what the changes in public safety will look like and how they will affect your future as well as that of the community. The very first one, and to me this really is critical, is what I call Civics 101. I can't tell you how often I talk to firefighters or police officers who have no idea how the system works. For example, firefighters have said to me, before they became aware, before they were educated, I had no idea. I thought the fire chief set the budget. I thought the fire chief told us what resources to cut. Well, that may be true in some cities or towns or counties. The ones I'm familiar with, it's not. Now, the fire chief or the police chief may say, here's what we can do given these resources, but they're not making the decisions. So Civics 101, you need to know and to show the public how your local government works. How are resources allocated? What is the process? Who makes the decision? Because when you know who makes the decision, you then can identify for them what's in it for me, and then you know how to approach them and try to ethically influence and inform the process. You need to know how to hold politicians and administrators accountable for the decisions. And I have to say, I don't know that I said this in my introduction, but in addition to my day job years ago at night, I was a community organizer. And I learned a lot of really effective ways to hold public officials accountable. Very straightforward, very direct, and respectful. Okay, so if you want some suggestions, please let me know. Happy to talk about it. We don't have time for that today. The other thing is we need to take a long-term approach to accountability for resource allocation. Now, the other thing to remember is that we've got some common interests here. But before I get to that, I'm sorry, one more thing. This picture is meant to show why one of the most important reasons why it's important for you to cultivate the relationships with the community and have people, have community advocates for public safety, is that the residents of your community vote. Many of you do not live in the communities that you serve. When that happens, politicians look at you and say, well, you don't vote for me, so, you know, let's move on here. So for many of you, it is critical for you to have the public as advocates for public safety because they have leverage that you do not. They can also ask questions that you cannot. The advocates vote, and they need to remind politicians to do this. They have power, but they don't always realize it. You need to remind them. You need to remind them to get out there and vote. So they need to identify themselves by voting district, for example. More people are better. Teach them how to focus on outcomes. Give them questions to ask. So have them ask the questions and have them ask and really demand of the decision makers, how do we know? What is the measure? How will we know when you have done what we have asked you to do? Now, we have a common goal, and by we, I mean the community, decision makers, public safety, and also within public safety, management and labor. There is a role for everyone to play, and collaboration on this common goal of safe communities is critical. For example, just as I said, there are things that the public can do. When we talk about labor and management, there are things that management can do more effectively than labor, and vice versa. So each group has a specific role. Allow them, all of them, to play the roles at which they are most effective. Coordinate these efforts, always keeping this common goal in mind. So our last question is, how will you prepare for change? And the question is not, will you prepare for change or can you prepare? The question is, how will you prepare? And by the way, one of the ways I love working with public safety professionals is that you already are there. Instead of asking the question, can we do this, you already are asking, how can we do this? And that is, it's wonderful. So how will you prepare? Public safety is changing. 85% of the calls on average nationwide are for emergency medical services and not for fires. There's competition. Resources are scarce. Tough decisions. Angry public. You need to be prepared to address all of these issues and others because they represent the new reality, and the decisions made about them will affect your ability to keep your community safe. You need to provide options for decision makers, not just yes or no choices. This picture is probably one of my favorite, and I use it here to illustrate the point that advocacy and education are processes. They are not tasks. And I know that particularly in the fire service, people tend to be very task-oriented because it keeps them safe in the field. But this is not a task. Education is not a task. Advocacy, they are processes that are used. And so it's just like this little girl. Think of this little girl as representing the public. We don't know what's coming. We don't know what's around the corner. We don't know what the risks are. We don't know what's going to happen if we cut resources. So it is your job to take that little girl by the hand and walk with her and to protect her and to let her know the possibilities of what goes beyond and to let her know you are there to keep her safe when you have her help. So help the public see beyond there. Help them see what preventive measures they can take. More prevention means lower mitigation costs. Less prevention means higher mitigation costs and things get out of control. So,
Pat, sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
Can we just have someone press star 2 to raise their hand to let us know if they can hear? I just had someone posed the question saying that the sound had cut out.
Okay.
I can hear you just fine, but I want to make sure that everyone else can as well. So if someone could just press star 2 for me so that I can know that I can see that you can hear, that would be great.
Okay, so maybe not. Okay, let me just finish this up. The recording will be sent to everybody, so if they did cut out, they can't hear us anymore, then certainly we can the end of this. Okay, so, all right, so we want to take this, please take us with you on your journey. All right, now, the next steps, we'll go over some next steps. I'll take any questions if there are any. If people can't hear us, then maybe not, and we'll summarize and wrap up. The next steps, I will send out the links for the recording of this call and a copy of the slides. There also will be a link to a very short survey that solicits your feedback, especially if there are topics you'd like me to present in the future. There are only 3 or 4 questions, so the survey takes only a few minutes. And I'm offering everyone on this call the opportunity for a 30-minute complimentary strategy session by phone. During this call, we could discuss how you might use this information in your own department and agency. Or you could use the time to get clarification of the topics we talked about or to ask additional questions. You can also request this session by responding to the survey. My contact information is on the last slide. Please call me or email me with your questions or comments. Now, it looks like we don't have any questions. Is that right, Kate?
I just have one comment from Bill in Columbia, Maryland.
Okay.
It says, inasmuch as EMS has become a significant portion of the current fire-based EMS systems, it is a mistake not to consider changing the business model to an EMS-based fire model. My experience has been that many do not believe their house will ever catch fire. However, do have concerns about the need for a medical response.
You know what, Bill, is that who provided the comment?
Yes, Bill.
Okay, thank you, Bill. That is exactly a great comment, and that is a great example also of how you can reframe the conversation. Because as you said, okay, you know, what are the chances that my house is going to catch on fire? Well, we like to think zero. However, medical emergency, oh yes, much, much higher. So use that information. And I know there are a lot of firefighters who joined the fire service because they want to put out fires. The reality is you're mostly going out on medical calls. So absolutely, that is a great comment and a great example. Thank you so much, Bill. Do we have any other questions or comments, Kate?
That is it at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so let me just give you a few resources. Within the next week or so, I'm going to have a special page on my website in which I will post relevant information about organizational alignment. And my website is www.businessalignmentstrategies.com. And I will send you that page. It's not up yet. It's not available. But, for example, it will have a template on there that I developed actually for the LA Fire Department for prioritizing organizational services and programs. You'll have access to a free ebook called From Confusion to Clarity, How to Prioritize Scarce Resources. I'll give you another opportunity there to apply for a one-hour complimentary strategy session on a larger topic of organizational alignment as opposed to this more narrow topic. And then I'll also have a list of articles, resource articles, very short, that relate to our topic, such as how do you help reframe issues. In the future, I'm going to add to that so that there will be some checklists and templates and other tools so you can refer back to it. Another resource is my website. It has lots of free articles, including a lot of how-to articles on, again, issues. What questions can you ask? How do you frame issues? And, again, it's businessalignmentstrategies.com. For those of you in the fire service, someone brought to my attention after this invitation went out, somebody let me know that there's a white paper called Fire Service Deployment, Assessing Community Vulnerability. It was published by the Metro Fire Chiefs and the Urban Fire Forum and addresses the issue of assessing the effect of changes in resources on community outcomes. Now, and it has lots of references to specific standards and regulations, as well as a great discussion of why fire service leaders need to be on top of this issue. However, what it does not cover is how to communicate this information effectively, which is what we did today in this webinar. So, in summary, we talked about how to do 4 things, how to change the conversation from cutting resources to providing responsible levels of public safety, how to channeling public support to active advocacy, getting your message out effectively, and participating effectively in the public safety conversation. I showed you how you might use some images to grab people's attention. We discussed the importance of your allowing the public to help you keep us safe. And I invited you to have a private phone conversation with me to talk about how you might apply the information we covered in your particular department or agency. So I appreciate your taking the time to join me today. My contact information is on this last slide. I would love to hear from you about your successes in creating communities of advocates for public safety in your areas. Thank you all for your service. Goodbye.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key.